All right, good morning, everyone. So, first of all, this shiur in this series, the class has been sponsored Le'ilui Nishmas Shalom Yeshaya Ben Yitzchak Mordechai Fishel and Chunur Ruvein Ben Moshe Aaron by the Gross family. We hope that in the merit of our Kama Torah, these neshamas will have an aliyah and the family in Achama. So we begin our journey today, we continue our journey today through Tehillim, and we're going to pick up, I'm going a little bit out of order, I know we left off in Kapitel Nun, or Nun Aleph, 50 or 51. I want to fast forward a little bit, being that today is Rosh Chodesh, so I want to take advantage of the opportunity to speak about a Kapitel of Tehillim that is very much linked and connected to Rosh Chodesh, and that is Kapitel Kuf Dalet, Kapitel 104, which is the Kapitel of Barchi Nafshi. So again, just because there may be new people who are joining us now as we pick up after the Yamim Tovim, so just one word of introduction that I try to give every year about Tehillim. So remember again, when the Navi introduces us to David HaMelech, so we know the famous story where Shaul was anointed by the Navi Shmuel. Shaul makes a series of mistakes that ultimately lead to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's choice to replace him as the monarch. Kadosh Baruch Hu sends the Navi Shmuel to the family of Yishai. And he says, among the sons of Yishai, you will go ahead and you will find someone who is going to be the next Melech al Yisrael. So Shmuel comes to Yishai and says, where are your sons? So Yishai gathers all of his older sons, who are already accomplished soldiers, valiant individuals. Shmuel goes through each of them one by one. And of course, again, none of them are chosen to be the Melech Yisrael. So he says to Yishai, do you have any more children? So Yishai's initial response is no. Shmuel prods him a little bit more. There's got to be someone else. And he says, sure, there's another boy, but he's a nar. He's a kid. He's a kid. And in fact, we're introduced there to David. And amazingly enough, we're introduced to David as being Admoni, of a ruddy complexion, and Yefeh Einayim, beautiful eyes. We've mentioned many times before that it's exceptionally unique that David HaMelech is introduced to us with Yefeh Einayim, with beautiful eyes, because throughout Tanakh, eyes, beautiful eyes, are always considered to be a feminine quality. Never throughout Tanakh do we ever see a man being praised for his eyes. In fact, the first time we find the Torah speaking about eyes is by Leah Imenu. We'll see it in just a few weeks. The Torah says, Ve'enei Leah Rakos. The eyes of Leah are soft, so you know, sometimes, when you learn things a certain way, especially from a young age, it's hard to deprogram yourself. So whenever we hear that phrase, we reflexively refer to Rashi. So Rashi says that Eni Leah Rakos means her eyes were red and swollen. So we know the famous Medrash that says everyone said that she was going to marry Esav. But aside from Rashi, if you look in the rest of the Mefarshim, no one learns it that way. And in fact, everyone else understands that Eni Leah Rakos means Leah had exquisitely beautiful eyes. That the Torah was contrasting Rachel and Leah. Whereas Rachel was Yifas Tor, Yifas Mara, Rachel was exceedingly beautiful. Leah had even a more exquisite aspect of beauty, which were her eyes. Leah Imenu had beautiful eyes. So amazingly enough, remember David HaMelech is the great-great-great-great-grandson of Leah Imenu, and he has those beautiful eyes as well. And the Mefarshim say, the Sfarno and others explain, what does it mean that Leah had beautiful eyes? So it might have been she had physically beautiful eyes, but what it also means, the Sfarno essentially picks up on the phrase that the eyes are the window to the soul. That when you looked at Leah's eyes, you looked into her eyes, you saw that there was something profound, there was something holy, there was something deep to this individual. When the Navi refers to David HaMelech as Yefeh Einayim, beautiful eyes, the Navi is telling us that there is so much more to David HaMelech than met the eye. That although he might have looked, he was a handsome man, he absolutely was a valiant warrior, but there was so much depth, there was so much profundity, there was so much holiness. And of course, all of that comes out in David HaMelech's Tehillim. All of that comes out in these magnificent words where you could read them and you could appreciate them. And as we've spoken about so many times, you could develop a profound appreciation from Tehillim even if you don't understand one word. In fact, many people, many Jews throughout the ages, have spent incredible amounts of time reading Tehillim, not understanding one word, yet still being profoundly moved by the experience of reading, of saying, of reciting Tehillim. So that's the beauty of this limud. That's on one hand, what we try to do is we try to go ahead and look at the words, but then we try to look into the eyes of David HaMelech and try to understand that behind every word is something so deep, something so profound, something so meaningful. So with that, let's begin Kapitel Kof Dal. So Baruch Hinafshi Es Hashem. May my soul bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem Elokai. Hashem, you are my God. Gadalta Me'od. You are very great. Hod Vahadar Levashta. We'll just use the English translation over here. You are attired with majesty and beauty. And then again, the capital, we're not going to go through the whole capital, but Oter Or Kasama, Nota Shamayim Kiriya, who roofs his upper chambers with water, makes clouds his chariot, which goes on the wings of the wind. And you could even see the rest of the capital. He founded the earth on its foundation. You covered the deep, speaking about the waters, the mountains, the valleys. Then the capital goes on to speak about the various animals. Beautiful, beautiful capital. So what's the message? Meaning what? Remember, again, every capital, it has a deeper message from David HaMelech. So what is the deeper message of this capital? So I'm going to ask you to skip now to number two. Again, you'll look at the rest of the capital on your own, but look at number two. The Ebenezer writes, "Umamizmar hazeh," within this capital, within this chapter of Tehillim, "Yisaper maaseh bereishis." This particular capital, this chapter of Tehillim, its entire message is to tell the story of creation. And in fact, you'll go back on your own afterwards, and you'll take a look through the capital. And amazingly enough, the capital almost follows the exact order of the creation narrative. This is also exciting because remember, we just read Parshas Bereishis. See, here again, we'll get to Rosh Chodesh in just a moment. But here again in this capital, Barchi Nafshi, David HaMelech is saying, "Ribono Shel Olam, my soul praises you," and he goes on to recount all of the wondrous aspects of creation. Ve'achel me'ar, that's how David HaMelech begins by speaking about the light. Ki hu ahava betchila, because again, that was on day number one, Kadosh Baruch Hu created light and darkness, Aron Choshech, ve'achar kach ha'shamayim va'aretz. Then David HaMelech goes on to speak about the heavens and the earth, vad shoim, vegetation, mooros, the luminaries, digay hayam, the fish of the sea, chayas haseda, the animals of the field, and then ha'adam. And then ultimately, David HaMelech goes on to speak about the creation of man. So according to the Ibn Ezra, at the end of the day, the essence of Kapitel Kof Dalet is David HaMelech reflecting, praising, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for creating the world in all of its aspects, with all of its facets, and essentially gives us a brief review, a beautiful praise-filled review of all of creation. Now, if we just pause here for a moment, you know, now we also understand why we recite this capital on Rosh Chodesh. Meaning again, Rosh Chodesh davening is long enough. We need another capital. We need another capital of Tehillim at the end. So now we understand. Because what is Rosh Chodesh? You know, in Musaf on Rosh Chodesh, we say, Roshei Chadoshim La'amcha Nasato. So the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, what do you mean Roshei Chadoshim? So we translate Rosh Chodesh as new month. Roshei Chadoshim means new beginnings. New beginnings. The power of Rosh, you know, Rosh Chodesh is often the most understated, neglected Yom Tov there is. Every single Rosh Chodesh essentially is like a Rosh Hashanah. Every single Rosh Chodesh is a brand new beginning. Every single Rosh Chodesh is a recreation of the world, the recreation of ourselves. And that's why, again, on Rosh Chodesh, we dafka read Kapitel 104, Kuf Dalet, because Kuf Dalet is the creation capital. We read it on Rosh Chodesh to reinforce within ourselves that Rosh Chodesh is not simply a calendrical reality, it is a life reality. Rosh Chodesh is an opportunity to restart. Rosh Chodesh is an opportunity to begin again. Rosh Chodesh is an opportunity to start all over. You don't start everything all over, but all of us have aspects of our lives that we would like to push the restart button on. And an amazing part is the Ribono Shel Olam gives us an automatic built-in restart at most once every 30 days. The truth is, I'll tell you a secret. You could start over every single day. Like every day is Rosh Chodesh. Every day is Rosh Hashanah. Every day is a new beginning. But there is a built-in calendrical reality in which, again, nature restarts, the world restarts, and therefore, by definition, we restart every single month as well. The Radakin number 3 has a very similar idea. Zeha Mizmor Misaper Bo Maaseh Bereishis. This Mizmor, this particular capital, speaks about the creation narrative. Ki Hakol Osa Kel Yisparach B'Chachma L'Tikun Habrios. And remember again, this is in general, you know, one of the most fundamental questions that the Mefarshim ask on Bereishis, on Parshas Bereishis, is why does the Torah tell us the story of creation? Meaning, remember, the Torah is not a storybook. The Torah is a book of laws. The Torah tells us legal realities, moral, ethical realities. Stories are only there because of their moral, legal, ethical, spiritual imperative. Nothing to do because the Torah likes a good story. If that's the case, why do we have the creation story? Again, understand one thing. No one understands the creation story. No one understands it. Why does no one understand it? Because Ribbono Shel Olam created Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing. We don't understand that concept. We have no idea what it means, something from nothing. We could take something and make it into something bigger or make it into something smaller, but man does not possess the ability nor the understanding of nothingness, because there is no such thing as nothingness in this world. You might be able to break things down to them at their smallest, most subatomic particles, but that is still a something. No one understands creation. Just like no one understands, everybody's always bothered by, how do you reconcile modern science, which says the world is 7 billion years old, with the Jewish calendar that says the world is 5777. It's not a kasha. It's not a question. Because remember, that counting 5777 is from the close of creation. From the first day post-creation, the world is 5,777 years old. You think that Ribbono Shel Olam created the world in 7 24-hour days? Each of those days could have been 7 billion years by themselves. Ribbono Shel Olam is not bound by time. It's not bound. Time is a man-made, a concept that bounds man. It's not a concept that bounds time. So is the world billions of years old? It's quite possible, because Ribbono Shel Olam might have taken his time during those days of creation for however long he wants. We don't understand these concepts. So why are they here? Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam go ahead and give us a whole parasha, which we really don't understand, we really don't know what it's talking about? What's the lesson? So the Mefarshim give many different lessons. The Radak says, you know what the lesson is? The lesson is that there is Seder to the world. There's an order. There's an order to creation. There's an order to the universe. Meaning, when you look at the creation story, what do you see? What do you see? I would expect a group of women to be able to pick on this like that. It's organized. It's organized. If a man was writing this story, right, it created land. Oh my gosh, we forgot the dark, the light. It created the synthesis. It's so organized. It's so organized. First there's light, then there's darkness, then there's earth, then there's Shemayim, then there's this, and this. It's organized. The message says the Radak is, there is Seder. In this world, there is Seder in life. So often, things happen to us, or we observe things that just seem to defy any type of rational order or understanding. Yes, there are many things in life that defy our rational understanding and appreciation of order. But there is no such thing as anything that happens in this world that is not part of the divine Seder. Everything is part of the divine order. Everything is part of the divine plan. Everything is part of the divine fabric of creation. Says the Radak, that is the message of the Genesis narrative. There is order to this world. We don't always understand it. We don't always see it. To us, it often looks just the opposite, like there's an absence of order, an absence of Seder, but that's okay. We're man. We're limited, we're finite, but we trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam that every circumstance, good or difficult, always follows a Seder. Says Radak back in number 3. Look what he says. That's why the capital begins Barchi Nafshi. Barchi Nafshi means let my soul praise. Let my soul praise. Or my soul bless the Lord. He says, Ki ein betachtonim mi sheyeda levarich elan nefesh ha'adam hamaskeles. David HaMelech says like this, Ribbono Shel Olam, there is only one part of me that could praise the Seder in creation. It's not my body, it's not my physicality, it's not my human part, because those things often don't understand why you do the things you do. But my nefesh, my soul, understands you perfectly. Like the Baal HaTanya writes, the neshama, the soul, is chelek elokami ma'al mamish. The soul is a spark of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The soul is a piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The neshama understands everything. The neshama understands everything. So that's why, if you notice, people with deep wellsprings of emuna, people who are very well connected with their neshama, have a beautiful inner peace in this world, even despite incredible difficulties or challenges. Because deep down, the neshama understands everything. The neshama understands the Seder, the neshama understands Bereishis, the neshama understands the order of this world. The guf doesn't. So if my guf and my neshama aren't communicating, say if my neshama's on AM and my body's on FM, so they're not on the same frequency, life is filled with many turbulent challenges and I'm constantly plagued by not understanding this. I'm fine. I'm really fine. I get very choked up in this class. So if my body and my soul are on the same frequency, then I'm able to understand everything.
Right.
But very often we're not on the same frequency. The great challenge of life is I have a neshama in me that understands everything. It understands everything. You know, the neshama has no questions. The neshama has no problems. The neshama is not plagued by any deep theological difficulties. The guf is. So if I quiet the guf and I'm able to allow the neshama to be the dominant voice, everything, it doesn't mean everything in life is easy, but I'm much better at accepting different things in life. Whereas if the body's always screaming over the soul, if the guf becomes the dominant thrust of my existence, the neshama can't get a word out edgewise. Then at the end of the day, a person lives a life of plagued by questions, difficulties, and unanswered questions. So therefore, the Radak says, that's why David HaMelech says, not barchi gufi, it's not my body that's praising God, it's barchi nafshi. Ribono shel Olam, I understand that this world has an order. And you know, when this comes from David HaMelech, remember, as we spoke about many times, David HaMelech has every single problem under the sun, except Parnasa. Okay, we always come back to that, which is a big one. David HaMelech never struggles with money. One of the advantages of being king. Thank you. David HaMelech never struggles with money, but aside from money, he struggles with absolutely everything else. So therefore, again, when David HaMelech says, Ribono Shel Olam, I just want you to know, my guf might not understand a lot of the stuff that goes on, but my nefesh, barchi nafshi, my nefesh understands everything. For my nefesh, there are no questions. For my nefesh, everything is understood because I made the conscious decision. You know, this is part of a much bigger shir, but one of the most important questions we have to answer ourselves is, how do we define ourselves in life? Am I a body that contains a soul, or am I a soul that is clothed by a body? And lest you think that that is semantics, it's not. It gets to the very core of our self-definition. What am I in my essence? Am I a body in my essence that happens to have a neshama, you know, stuffed into it? Or am I a neshama that happens to have a body because that's the only way that my neshama can interact with this world? It's a good exercise. Don't do it now, but it's a good exercise when you have 5 minutes of quiet, like at 3 o'clock in the morning. When you have 5 minutes of quiet, to ask yourself that question and to answer it honestly. Because the way you answer that question says a lot about where I'm holding in life and what I'm doing. And obviously, we know what the right answer is. There's only one right. The correct answer is, I am in the neshama. That's what I am in my essence. I am in the neshama because that's the part of me that's eternal. But my neshama can't interact with us because Baruch Hu gave me the blessing of a guf. This guf allows me to accomplish things in this world. This guf allows me to interact with this world. But that's not my essence. That's not really who I am. When a person has that level of definition, David HaMelech says, that's barchi nafshi. Barchi nafshi is the ability, I define myself as a nefesh. I define myself as a neshama. That's primarily who I am. And if that is my primary identity, I begin to understand all of creation. Again, I don't have all the answers. I want to be clear. It doesn't mean I have all the answers, but I'm able to accept the realities of this world. Why? Because I realize they're not random. I realize they're not haphazard. I realize that ultimately, again, they're part of the fabric of some divine greater plan of which I am a part. The Malbim goes on. So the Malbim explains the same general idea. We could skip to number 5 a little bit. So the Medrash says something quite striking. The Medrash in Tehillim writes, hold the vahada levashta. So look what the Medrash writes. He says, "Basar v'dam." It's a fascinating statement. Im gibor eino noah, v'im noah eino gibor. What the Medrash says: when it comes to man, if he is strong, he's not noah. How would you define noah? Pleasant or beautiful. Pleasant or beautiful. See, if he's strong, he's not pleasant. If he's strong, he's not pleasant slash beautiful. Which again, so when it comes to man, if a human being, if I'm a strong-willed person, if I'm strength, then that gvura becomes my primary identity. The no'eh, the pleasantness or the beauty is not really found. Aval HaKadosh. And same thing, im no'eh, ein a gibor. Right? By the way, just if you want to see the perfect example of this, this is the Moshe Aaron dichotomy, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was a gibor. And therefore what? Did people like Moshe Rabbeinu?
Yes.
You know, I mentioned this before. You know, the Klal Gadol in life is great people usually become great when they die.
Right.
You know, it's an amazing thing. A person goes to a levaya, and what happens? As they're taking out the aron, as taking out the casket, everybody stands up. So when that person was alive, everybody treated them like a piece of garbage. But now they're being wheeled out, they're being carried out, so everybody stands up. So what's the pshat? Because when a person dies, they become Judaica. Everybody has respect for Judaica. Right? Judaica is big stuff, right? I like the menorah, I like this, I like that. So Judaica, everybody respects. People is a whole different story. When Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, understand, when there was a collection for the Mishkan, the people accused him of skimming off the top. When Moshe Rabbeinu had to separate from his wife because he had to be in a constant state of preparedness for Nevuah, people said he must be engaging in some type of adulterous affair. Moshe Rabbeinu, because it's impossible for a man to live, he must be engaged in some type. And every single step of the way, Moshe Rabbeinu is always being accused of the most horrific or heinous crimes. To us, it sounds crazy. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. When he died, so people mourned. And not even everybody mourned. Right? Some people mourned. A good part of the people mourned. But everybody mourned. Yet, interestingly enough, Aaron was beloved. Aaron was beloved by everyone. Right? Aaron, ultimately, when he dies, it's Vayivko, so Kol Beis Yisrael. Everybody mourned for Aaron. What's the distinction? It's very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu had to be a gibor. Moshe Rabbeinu had to say no. Moshe Rabbeinu had to draw the line in the sand. Moshe Rabbeinu had to go ahead and say, I'm sorry, this is not right, or you can't do this, or there's going to be repercussions for this. Well, guess what? When you have to draw your line in the sand, so not everybody likes you. Aaron HaKohen never had to go ahead and draw a line in the sand. Aaron was the Oif Shalom, Ro Dave Shalom. Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. He was the paradigmatic embodiment of love and acceptance. So when you're the paradigmatic embodiment of love and acceptance, and you never have to take a hard stand on anything, of course everyone loves you. You know, this is as a famous Chassan Sofer. The Chassan Sofer writes, he says, any Rav who is despised by everyone is not a mensch. But any Rav who is loved by everyone is not doing his job. It's an incredible, incredible yisod. Because at some point in time, you have to make decisions that people don't like. That's Moshe. That's the Medrash means. The Medrash says Moshe Rabbeinu was a gibor. And therefore, he could not be Noah. Aaron was Noah. I mean, this is just my example, not Medrash. Aaron was Noah. And therefore, what? He was not a gibor. Just in this world, those two qualities often do not go hand in hand. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Gibor v'Noah. The exception to this rule, of course, not the exception, but this rule is only true by man. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam is both a Gibor as well as a Noah. He is strong, but he's also beautiful, also pleasant. And then the Medrash goes on to explain how the Ribono Shel Olam has given different attributes to different people. If you skip a little bit, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'asid Lavo, last line in number 5 on the second page. La'asid Lavo Ani Nosnam L'melech HaMashiach Shnei Rakisi D'Gamer Brach V'Stov Hod V'Hadr Tish V'Alov V'Lo L'melech HaMashiach B'Lovat Hu Nosin Ela L'Chomishu Yagia B'Torah. So amazing enough, the Medrash writes that one of the hallmarks of the Messianic era is that the Ribono Shel Olam is going to give man the ability to somehow create almost an internal equilibrium between Gvura and Noa. Between on one hand being strong, principled, being able to take a strong stand, but yet still be pleasant, still be beautiful. All right, but we'll leave the messianic era on the side for now. The point that I want you to focus on the Medrash is the following. That the Medrash says that ultimately the hallmark of the Ribono Shel Olam is that he's both Gibor, he's strong, and he's Noah, beautiful / pleasant. Man could only be one. Look at number 6. The Radak seizes on this Medrash and says, this is the meaning of Hod V'Hadar Lavashta. What does that mean? So we translated Hod V'Hadar Lavashta as you are attired with majesty and beauty. Says Radak Shkoyach. What does that mean? Hod v'hadar levashta. So he says, quotes the Medrash, Basar v'dam, imhu gibor eno na'eh, v'im na'eh eno gibor. So a person, human being, if he's strong, he's not na'eh, he's not pleasant. And if he's pleasant, he's not strong. Ein bo shnei dvarim ke'echad. In this world, among men, it's impossible for a person to be proficient, simultaneously proficient in both of those midos. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yesh bo shnei dvarim. The Ribono Shel Olam has them both. And says Radak, this is the meaning. Ha-hod v'ha-hadar. So according to the Radak, which is quite beautiful, hod ultimately means strength, gvura, and hadar ultimately means no'eh, pleasant or beautiful. That David HaMelech seems to be saying Ribono Shel Olam. Right? Hashem Elokai gadaltu ma'od. Ribono Shel Olam, you are so great. Do you know one of the greatest manifestations of your divine greatness? Hod v'hadar levashta. You are able to be hod, which according to the Radak means strong. Gvura, you're able to be strong. V'hadar, and you're able to be beautiful as well. So the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's go out of order. The hadar, the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the hiddur of the Ribono Shel Olam is quite clear. Right? Where? How do we see the beauty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
In the world?
Creation. That's the simplest idea. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos. The Rambam says that if a person wants to come to a true emunah, a true belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a true appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's amazing. You would think that I'm going to tell you, open up a sefer, right? Look, no, just go into nature. Go into nature. Look at a sunrise. Look at a sunset. Look at the fall foliage. Look at the beautiful sea. You see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in these things. It's magnificent. No artist, even the greatest artist in the world, could not make what the Ribono Shel Olam created. Therefore, says the Rambam, you want to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all you need to do is take a step back. You know, the Rav calls this, the Rav Soloveitchik discusses in his essays on Tefillah, the different mediums in which one could connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So one of the mediums he discusses is nature. And I think he quotes from Thoreau or from Walden, I don't remember which of the authors, but he speaks about, again, standing under a starlit sky and gazing into infinity. The idea, and we know this, that if you're ever somewhere, it's harder to do, like in the areas where we live, because there's a lot of artificial light, but you ever find yourself in a place that is not well lit by artificial light, and you look up into the stars, it's absolutely amazing. You feel a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you feel a closeness. That's the Hadar. You want to see the beauty of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, all you need to do is look at Ma'aseh Bereishis. All you need to do is look at creation. But what is the strength? Where is the real hold? What is the real strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So of course, sometimes the reflexive answer to that is, the real strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is where?
In the Torah?
So specifically in Onesh, in punishment, in the ability, so that is true, that's definitely a manifestation of divine strength, but remember, that's not our primary conception of the Ribono Shel Olam as a punishing God. The Ribono Shel Olam doesn't seek to punish, just the opposite. The Ribono Shel Olam ultimately seeks to forgive, seeks to love. So what is the real strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So take a look at number 7. So amazingly enough, I think the answer to this is found in last week's parasha. So remember, I'm quoting from you now from Parak Vav and Bereishis, which is the end of Parshas Bereishis. So what does the Torah say? Number 7, Vayar Hashem ki rabba ra'asa adam ba'aretz. Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that man was very evil. V'chol yetzer machshavas libo rak ra kol hayom. And the Ribono Shel Olam saw, we'll just use the English translation over here, every imagination of his heart was only evil at all the time. So essentially, man, really from the chait of Adam Arishon, going into Cain, killing Hevel, Enosh introducing idolatry, man has been on a downward spiral. So finally it hits a point where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what, I'm just overwhelmed by the evil of man. And therefore in Pasuk Vav, a very dramatic Pasuk, Vayinochim Hashem ki asa es ha'adam ba'aretz vayis'atzev al-libo. So the way this phrase is normally translated is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu regretted. That's the English translation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu regretted. That's the etymological root, really, of Vayinochim. He was regretted that he made man. Vayis'atzev al-libo. And he was grieving. Yes. Ribono Shel Olam was going through grief. He was going through a grieving process for man. Even though man, it's the same way sometimes when a person has a loved one who is very sick, and I know that person is going to die, even before they die, sometimes a grieving process begins even while the person is still alive. The Ribono Shel Olam is grieving for man. I'm torn up. He's grieving for man. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to wipe out man. I'm going to wipe out man. And again, this is the end of Parashas Bereishis. I'm sorry? So Rashi brings down that everything, all living creatures had become corrupted. Even the animals were mating with other species. Everything had become corrupted. Man's perversion permeated every aspect of the living world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to wipe out the world, start again. And we know again, that's this week's parasha. Remember, Noach essentially becomes the second Adam. Adam was the first father of humanity. Noach becomes the second father of humanity. So all of the Mefarshim are intrigued by this Vayinochim. We think the Ribono Shel Olam regretted creating man. So look at number 8. So the Medrash says, Shenischarit Sha'asa ab Adam ba'aretz. The Ribono Shel Olam regretted. He actually regretted. God had remorse that he created man. Lufi Shalchu achar machshavas libam. He regretted it. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, what's the problem? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu regret anything? Meaning, regret is a human emotion, which essentially says, I thought that what I was doing at the time was a good thing. It turns out I was wrong. I was wrong. Therefore, I regret. Right, we just came off the season of Charata. Right, what happens? I commit an Avera because at the time I thought it was a good idea. I thought I was going to get something. I then have Charata. I have remorse. Yeah. Why? Because I didn't get from the sin what I thought I was going to. And had I known then what I know now, I would have never done this. Is that what it's saying? Ribono Shel Olam, I have regret about creating man. Nischarit. And the parenthesis seems to say, had I known what was going to happen, I would have never created man. So that can't be, because Ribono Shel Olam knows everything. So that's why the Ibn Ezra comes along in number 9 and says, Chalila, it can't be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has regret over creating man. Kilo Adam hu lehinachein. Because God is not a human being who could experience remorse, who could feel bad about having created something. Rak, Dibra Torah al derech ha'adam. Rather, according to the Ibn Ezra, what is this? This is an example of anthropomorphism. Torah is filled with anthropomorphic statements where essentially we ascribe human qualities to God. The same way we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, biyad chazaka, a strong hand. What does that mean? Like God doesn't have a hand. God, remember, one of the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikaram, one of his 13 principles, is that the Ribono Shel Olam has no physical form. So any time that you hear anything in the Torah that refers to God's physicality, ultimately, again, it's anthropomorphic. It's in order to allow us human beings, physical beings, to relate to God. So it ascribes to God some type of physical realities. Therefore, according to the Ibn Ezra, Torah is just giving us a window into God's sadness and giving us an emotional frame of reference to which we can relate. God regretted. Literally God regretted? No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't regret because that indicates some type of lack of knowledge at the outset. The Radak says same idea. Number 10. Vayinachim mashar vayinachim dibra Torah kilashon b'nei Adam. Ki al derech ha'emes lo adam hu lihinachein, ki ein shinui chafetz bo yisbarach v'yisale. Again, it's only anthropomorphic. Torah is using human emotions, human expressions to explain God's pain, God's grief, but it should not be understood that the Ribono Shel Olam regretted having created man. Comes along Rashi, and Rashi says something absolutely astounding. Rashi says, you're all getting excited for no reason. You know why? Because you're all translating the word the wrong way. See, everyone is translating Vayinochim as the Ribono Shel Olam regretted. Then again, understand themselves. That's how the Medrash says. The Medrash says Shenischarit. The Medrash, God regretted creating man. So, I mean, that's everybody has to scramble to understand what that means. Rashi says Vayinochem doesn't mean regret. So what does Vayinochem mean? Ne'epcha machshavto shamakom imidas hadin, imidas rachel imidas hadin. Ola b'machshava v'cholosho nicham shebemikra, losho nimloch malaso. Says Rashi, nichamti, nichoma, vayinochem nichamti does not mean regret. Instead it means a change of orientation, a change of disposition. I looked at things one way, now I'm going to be look at things another way. So according to Rashi, the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world with the Midas Harachamim, the divine attribute of compassion. Man has exhausted my compassion. Therefore, I am now switching ultimately again to Midas Hadin, to the divine attribute of justice. So Rashi gives us a very powerful definition. So according to Rashi, ultimately again, Nechama doesn't mean, Nichamti doesn't mean remorse or regret. It means a change of perspective. But we've spoken about this before, because this is important for another context. We often translate the word nechama also as
consolation.
So according to Rashi, the word nechama doesn't mean consolation either. The word nechama means the same thing all the time, which is a change of perspective, a change of orientation. So if Soloveitchik has a beautiful piece on this, I've definitely shared this with you, if not in this year, in a different wit context. You know, the Rav asked this question on Shabbos Nachamu. He says, you know, it's interesting. So Shabbos Nachamu, there's such an air of celebration, right? Everybody's vacationing. It's wonderful. It's great. And what's amazing is that, you know, Tisha B'Av might have been just a few days earlier. We're sitting on the ground. We're crying, mamish, like in the midst of Shiva for all that we've lost. And suddenly Shabbos Nachamu comes and everybody's happy, celebratory. And the Rav asks a very simple question, which is, what's changed? We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. Mashiach didn't come. There's been no Tchiyas HaMeisim. So, like, really, if you think about it, the nature of the world as it was on Tisha B'Av morning when I'm sitting on the floor crying is no different than it is on Shabbos Nachamu. Yet, where's the celebration? So the Rav borrows this idea from Rashi. And it's because everyone thinks Shabbos Nachamu is consolation. So Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. The Navi's not saying, even though we translate it as be consoled, be consoled. The Navi's saying change your perspective, change your orientation. See, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we thought that there was an existential threat to the continuity and the future of Klal Yisrael. We thought this was the end of the road, the end of the story. That's it. Klal Yisrael is done. And you know what's amazing? You know what's amazing? The ash heap of the Beis HaMikdash was still smoldering. But we're here. We survived. Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. There's continuity to Klal Yisrael. Nothing could go ahead and ever damage, or it could be damaged, but it can never bless you, or never obliterate or erase Klal Yisrael. It's the same way. We stand by the ash heap of 6 million Kedoshim. It's an existential threat to Klal Yisrael, but yet what? We're still here, and we're not just surviving, we're thriving. Says the Rav, that's Shabbos Nachamu. On Tisha B'Av, in the morning, we feel like, oh my gosh, I can't go on like this anymore. There's no more hope. Everything is so bleak. Everything is so dark. And then you know what happens? We go home. We break the fast. Amazing how a bagel changes your whole perspective on life, right? And suddenly again, I smile, and suddenly I realize that life is good, and this beautiful bracha, yes, there's a void because I don't have my Beis HaMikdash, and there's a void because I don't have my loved ones, and there's a void because we've lost millions over the ages, but you know what? The sky's not falling. The sky's not falling. I'm here. Standing on my own 2 feet, Baruch Hashem, my people is strong, we're thriving, we're rebuilding, we're doing magnificent things, that's Nechama. Nechama doesn't mean consolation. Nechama means change of orientation. So now if we take this, what's happening over here? The Ribbono Shel Olam is saying, Nichamti, Nichamti, if you go back to number 7 for just a moment, Vayinochem Hashem ki osa, Vayisasei valibo, Vayomer, right? Ribbono Shel Olam is upset. He's upset. But he doesn't regret. Instead, what does he do? If Nichamti really meant regret, then what would God have done? Destroy everything. Destroy everything. He says, not Kosh Baruch Hu does. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, you know what? I need to regroup. I need to reorient. And I need to find a way to move on from, I'm going to use this term in quotations, failure. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to himself, I feel like a failure. I, Ribbono Shel Olam, you knew exactly what was going to happen. You know, Rashi quotes the famous Medrash that there was once Turnus Rufus went to Rabbi Akiva and he said, you say your God is all-knowing, but how can you say your God, he opened up Bereishis, how can you say your God is all-knowing?
Yeah.
God seems so crushed and so devastated over the fact that man failed. God didn't know man was going to fail. So Rabbi Akiva says in the Gemara, he says to Turnus Rufus, tell me, did you ever have a son? Did you ever have a child? He said, yes. What did you do when you had the child, when the child was born? He says, Samachti v'simachti esakol. I celebrated, I made a great celebration for everyone else. He said, Rabbi Akiva, tell me, did you not know that one day that child is going to die? Did you not know that one day the child is going to die? The father said, of course. But, be'es chadusa chadusa, or be'es avela avela. When it's time to celebrate, celebrate. When it's time to mourn, mourn. To which Rabbi Akiva says, exactly. The Ribono Shel Olam knew how the story is going to end. He knows how every story is going to end. But that didn't change his perspective when he created man from being filled with an incredible sense of optimism, of hope, of unbridled optimism for what the future was going to bring. Okay, it didn't work out. It didn't work out. Not because God didn't try, because man made bad decisions. So now if you're the Ribono Shel Olam, if you're the Ribono Shel Olam, you have a choice. What's your choice? You could lament your quote-unquote failure. You could lament that things did not go according to your way. Or you could regroup. You could regroup. You go out and you say, okay, plan A didn't work. Plan A didn't work. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to throw my hands up and surrender to life. Instead, I need to reorient myself. Vayinochim Hashem. I need to change my perspective. Man, as I wanted him to be, will not be. Man as I envisioned him will not be. Man will never fully actualize his potential. Man will never be as righteous, as pure, as holy as I know deep down he could be. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Take a look at number 12. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Noah, fast forwarding a little bit. I don't want to ruin the end of the story for you. But Noah does get off the teva. And what happens? He offers up karbonos. Vayorach Hashem esreach anichoach. So what happens? Ribono Shel Olam smells the beautiful, pleasing aroma. Vayomer Hashem elibo lo osif lekalel odes haadama ba'avur haadam. So what does he say? I will no longer curse the earth because of man. Ki yetzer leif haadam ra minuarav. Velo osif od lahakos es kolchai kasher asisi. So everyone understands, you know, this is such a damning phrase. Ki yetzer leif haadam ra minuarav. What does that mean? So many, and this is especially found much more in Christian theology, that it tells you man is evil from his beginning. Man's natural disposition is evil. It's not what it means. If that was true, that man was inherently evil, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide to start over with us again? Why? It's an exercise in futility. Ki yetzer leif ha'adam ra minuarav means Ribono Shel Olam is accepting the inherent shortcomings of man. I understand that man will never live up to my expectations of him. Because Ribono Shel Olam says, you know what, expectations are high. I set the bar high. Ki yetzer leif ha'adam ra minuarav is, Ribono Shel Olam says, I accept the shortcomings of man. I accept that he's not going to be as I envisioned. I'm willing to reorient and change my perspective, in order to adjust to my new realities. That's what's happening over here in Parshas Noach. In Parshas Bereishis, the Ribono Shel Olam begins with one set of expectations from man. Man fails miserably. The Ribono Shel Olam is crushed because of, quote-unquote, his own perceived failure. What does God choose to do? God chooses nechama. God chooses to change his perspective, recreate the world with a renewed, different, modified, and adjusted view of man. This is the greatest koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ability to change perspective, which allows HaKadosh Baruch Hu to, so to speak, rebound from failure. I'm using these words very carefully. I don't mean, when I say rebound from, I'm using the Torah is giving us a window into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emotions to teach us a lesson. The Ribono Shel Olam didn't fail. Man failed. God did not fail us. We failed God. But you know how sometimes when my child doesn't do what's right, so every parent, especially Jewish ones, automatically, what? What did I do wrong? They didn't do anything wrong. You know, at some point in time, our kids grow up and they make, or they get older, and they make their own decisions. Right. And they have to take responsibility for their own decisions. And I could be the best parent in the world, doesn't mean my child is going to make, but again, it's natural. I so much invested in this child. So my child makes this bad decision. Say, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing. The Ribbono Shel Olam is saying, what did I do? What did I do? I gave him everything. I had not the iPhone 7, but I gave him everything else besides. Please don't give your children the iPhone 7. Right? Please. Right? But I gave him everything else. I gave everything else that or any other electronic device that's not necessary for their spiritual maturation. But that's a side thing. And anyway, I gave them everything. I gave them everything they wanted. I gave them everything they needed. I gave them Gan Eden. I gave them each other. I gave them everything. What did I do wrong? How did I fail so miserably? So, of course, the answer is, we put our arm around the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, you didn't do anything wrong. You're the best father possibly imaginable. You're the best mother possibly imaginable. It's not your failure. It's our failure. But the Ribbono Shel Olam chooses to rebound from that failure. How? By readjusting, just give me a few minutes, by readjusting his orientation. By going ahead and changing his perspective. Okay? I have to have renewed expectations of that. Are they lowered expectations? Absolutely. Absolutely. Are they the heightened, exalted expectations of Bereishis? Absolutely not. But herein lies the great koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam never gets sidelined by quote-unquote failure. Instead, what he does is, he changes his expectations, he changes his perspectives, and he rebounds back to re-engage. And here's the amazing part. Man has that koach as well. Take a look at number 13. I spoke about this on Shabbos, but I want to share this with you today. The Torah says the following. Vatira, so again, going back to Bereishis a little bit. So remember again, we'll skip a little bit. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Adam HaRishon one mitzvah. Adam and Chava one mitzvah. Don't eat from the Eitz Das Tov V'Ra. Don't eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So what happens, without getting into the whole story, Chava is enticed to eat from the tree. She gives to Adam, fine. Number 13, Pasuk Zayin. Vatipakachna Einei Shneihem. Vayidu ki erumim him. Their eyes were open. And they realized they were unclothed. They were naked. Vayitpiru alei te'ino. Vayasulam chagoros. They took fig leaves and they made for themselves belts. They made for themselves clothing. Vayishmu es kol Hashem Elokim mishalich bagan l'ruach hayom. They hear whatever this means, but they hear the voice of God coming, walking in the garden. Vayischabe ha'adam v'ishto mipnei Hashem Elokim b'soch eitz hagan. And Adam and Chava, they hide. Vayikra Hashem Elokim ala Adam v'yomer lo ayeka. God calls out to Adam, Adam, where are you? Vayomer es kol chashamati bagan v'ira. I heard your voice, Kadosh Baruch Hu. I got scared because I was unclothed and therefore I hid. Who said to you that you're naked? Or really, who said to you there's anything shameful in that? Tell me, did you eat from the tree that I told you not to? So the one interesting, there are many interesting pieces here, but one of the most intriguing pieces is Kadosh Baruch Hu calls out to Adam and he says to Adam, Ayeka, where are you? Now the obvious question is, Ribbono Shel Olam is all-knowing. So Rashi HaKadosh, which echoes most of the Mefarshim, says in number 14, Ayaka, Yodea Heichanu. God, of course, knew exactly where Adam was. Ela Likanes Imo Bidvarim. The Ribbono Shel Olam was trying to create a dialogue. Meaning, again, you want to speak of expectations. The way the Ribbono Shel Olam had hoped this story was going to unfold was how? Adam, where are you? Anything new? Anything going on? And Adam would have said, two words. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's all the Ribbono Shel Olam was looking for. Just own it. Just own it. Just own it. You know, the debacle of the Garden of Eden story is not the fact that they sinned. The debacle was that Adam blamed Chava. Chava blamed the Nachash. I'm sure there's a measure somewhere that the Nachash blamed his mother or someone else. You know, everybody's got someone to blame. And the Ribbono Shel Olam probably feels like the Ganenet. You know, I am like the nursery school teacher. I know you did something wrong. Just own it. Just own it. All I need you to say is, God, I messed up big time. How do we take care of this? I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Can you help me navigate out of this? According to Rashi, Ayeka was just an entry to dialogue. Adam, where are you? Where are you? And God hoped that would be the tshuva-filled dialogue. But amazingly enough, the great tzaddik Rabbi Yisrael of Rishon, the Rishoner, has a different approach. You see, if you go back up to number 13 for just a moment, the Rishner explains the following. So the Rishner says, when they ate from the tree, they realized that they were naked. Says the Rishner, everyone thinks it's talking about their physicality. It's not their physicality, says Rabbi Sarla Rishin. It's their spirituality. They realized that God had given them one mitzvah. One mitzvah. Don't eat from this tree. You could eat from the one next to it, the one to the left, the one to the right, the one in front, the one in back. Just not that one tree. That's my only expectation I have of you. My only request is just don't eat from one tree. Ultimately, they realized, says Rabbi Sola Brzezin, Adam and Chava realized they were naked, spiritually naked. We divested ourselves of all of our holiness. God had one expectation of us, and we failed. God had one requirement of us, and we failed. They felt spiritually naked, spiritually absent. So what do they do? Vayishmu es kol Hashem Elokim ishalech bagan ruach hayom, vayischabe ha'adam v'ishto mipnei Hashem Elokim b'socha itzagan. They assume that now that they are spiritually naked, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants nothing to do with them. Why would God want to have a conversation with us? Why would God want to have a relationship with us? We divested ourselves. We are spiritually unclothed. We've divested ourselves of just a little bit of holiness that we possessed. We violated the one commandment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has of us. And says Rabbi Yisrael of Rishin, something amazing. Vayikra Hashem Elokim ala Adam vayomer lo, Ayeka, Adam, why did you run from me? Ayeka doesn't mean where are you. Ayeka means, says the Rishiner, why are you hiding? Why are you hiding from me? To which Adam responds, I'm still reading in number 13, Pasuk Yud. Vayomer es kolcha shamati bagan. Because I heard you coming. Va'ira ki'erom anochi. And I know that I am spiritually unclothed. I've divested myself of all of my holiness. Ve'echave. And I hid from you. Because I assume that now that I've divested myself of all of my holiness, you want nothing to do with me. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds in Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer. Who told you that just because you are spiritually naked, who told you that just because you're spiritually unclothed, that you've divested yourself of your holiness, that I don't want anything to do with you? Who told you that? Who told you that you need to hide from me? You think that because you did something wrong and you ate from the tree, that I don't want anything to do with you? And the Ribbono Shel Olam is trying to tell Adam, you know what your mistake is? Yes, mistake number one is that ultimately, again, you went ahead and you ate from the tree. But mistake number two, which is even more catastrophic, is you think that as a result of your mistake, I don't want anything to do with you. You think you have to hide from me? You think that because you're spiritually unclothed, because you're spiritually naked, because you've divested yourself of all of your holiness, that I don't want a relationship with you? That I don't love you? That I don't care about you? Why are you hiding from me? Come to me and we'll work this out together. Come to me because I love you. Even when you are spiritually unclothed, I love you. Even when you do things wrong. In other words, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to teach Adam was an incredible lesson. See, Adam thought, you have to understand that eating of the tree, it was a sin. It was a sin. But you know, there's another synonym for sin, and that is a failure. And this was not just the first sin of humanity, but the first failure of humanity. And Adam HaRishon thought that there is no rebounding from failure. Once you fail, you're done. To which the Ribbono Shel Olam says, unequivocally false. No matter how badly you fail, no matter how badly you fall, no matter how spiritually unclothed you may be, you always have the ability to rebound. That's the lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us in this story. Why are you hiding from me? I love you. I care about you. You can fix this. And by the way, if you'll notice, later on in the parsha, the Ribbono Shel Olam says this explicitly. I should have put this on the sheet. Where did he say it explicitly? After Cain and Hevel offer up their karbanos, Adam's sons, and Hevel's karban is accepted and Cain's is not, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Cain three words. You know what they are? Im seitiv seis. If you better yourself, if you improve yourself, says you'll be lifted up. Why? Why are you upset? You see, everybody thought that once you fail, you're done.
It's done.
And Moshe was trying to teach mankind that even when you fail, you could always rebound. Because nechama, the ability to change perspective, the ability to re-engage, the ability to pick yourself back up and try again, is not limited to the Ribono Shel Olam. Man, because we are that spark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have that incredible koach as well. Says Rabbi Yisrael of Rizhin, that's why the Torah teaches us this entire story, because we think that when we fail, we're down and out. We think that when we fail, we go and hide. We think that when we fail, in the spiritual life sense, that's it, there's no rebounding. So, mihi gid lecha ki eiromata, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Who says that just because you failed, even if you failed miserably, and you're spiritually unclothed, who said that is the end of the road? Man can always rebound. And so it turns out that the great koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we identified as the power of nechama, the power of changing perspective, the power to move on, change perspective, and therefore move on from failure, is not just a koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather it's also a koach of man. God's greatest ability is our greatest ability as well. In the wake or in the aftermath of failure, we have the ability to change our perspective and ultimately find a way to rebound and to move on. And perhaps if we go back to number one, maybe that's the pshat in the opening phrase of Barchi Nafshi. David HaMelech says, Barchi Nafshi es Hashem. Ribono Shel Olam, my soul praises you. My soul praises you. And as we said before, my soul praises you. Why? Because my soul understands this world. My soul understands the Seder. My soul understands the order. I get it. There is a rhythm. There is an order. There is a Seder to everything. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, Gadalta Ma'od. You are great. You know why you're great, God? Because Hod Vahad Levushta, Levashta. Because remember again, God is Hod Vahad. How do we translate Hod Vahad according to the Medrash, according to the Radak? Hod is strength. Ribon Shalom is strong, strength, and Hadar is beauty. His beauty is seen in creation. How is his strength perceived? Again, his strength is perceived in Nechama. The ability to change perspective and rebound from failure. Or perhaps David HaMelech is saying something else. Maybe Hod Vahadar Levashta is not just a statement about God, but maybe David HaMelech is talking about his own Neshama as well. Barchi Nafshi Es Hashem. David HaMelech is saying, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm not talking to you from my mouth. I'm talking to you from my neshama. I'm talking to you from my soul. My soul is praising you. And Ribono Shel, I want to tell you something. Hod Vahadar Lavashta. You wear Hod Vahadar. You wear this strength and this beauty. It's not just you who wear strength and beauty. My neshama, right? He's referring to his neshama in the third person as well. Hod Vahadar Lavashta. You, my neshama, my nafshi, also wears Hod Vahadar. Just like the Ribono Shel Olam has strength and beauty, God's beauty is in His creations. Our beauty is in our creations as well. At the end of the day, we create many beautiful things. Every act of chesed, every single mitzvah, every single act of tzedakah, those are our creations. Those are our acts of beauty. That's our Hadar. Ribono Shel Olam has it, we have it. Ribono Shel Olam has his hod, we have our hod as well. Okay. The Ribono Shel Olam's hod is manifest in nechama, in his ability to change perspective and rebound from failure. That's our hod as well. That's the great power of the neshama. That's the great power of a person. We are not capable of perfection. We cannot attain perfection. But here's the good news. Here's the good news. There's no expectation of perfection. The Ribono Shel Olam doesn't expect anything of us that we are not capable of delivering. So if there's no expectation of perfection, what is there an expectation for? There's an expectation that when we fail, we don't run behind the trees to hide. There's an expectation that when we fail, even if we divest ourselves of all of our holiness, we're spiritually unclothed, that we find the koach, we find the nechama to readjust our perspective, to rebound and to re-engage. That's the great hallmark of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's strength, and it's the great hallmark of our strength as well. All right, we'll stop over here. We'll continue in Kuftal. We'll spend one more week on Kuftal as well. Okay.